Blog Talk Radio.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal or?
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. And I don't know what it was, just it ran across the yard.
Okay. You've had problems in the neighborhood before?
Yeah, my dog was killed here just recently. I don't know what it was. Whatever it is, it's running. I couldn't catch it if I was going to chase it. But whatever it was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sure. Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh. Okay, hang on.
He's right...
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
You're listening to the Sasquatch Experience Radio Show live on Blog Talk Radio. With your hosts, Sean Forger, Henry May, and James Baker. Bringing you the best in Bigfoot Talk Radio. And the show starts now.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Henry May. Sean and James have not made it yet. They will probably make it during the show. Also, my guest has not made it yet. But tonight and today is a very special day for Bigfooters and Bigfoot history. Of course, today is the 40th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin movie. Those who are familiar with the story, I don't think I need to go into it as far as, you know, you guys basically know the story. Essentially, you know the story. You know what happened. But today is also, not only is it the 40th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin movie, there is also a few birthdays, some famous, some semi-famous. Earl Hindman, better known as Wilson W. Wilson, the mostly hidden neighbor of Tim the Toolman Taylor on Home Improvement, was born on this day in 1942. Also, Jerry Orbach, better known as Detective Lenny Briscoe on Law & Order, his birthday is today. He was born on this day in 1935. And the Bigfoot community's very own Autumn Williams was born on this day in 1900. she's 29 again, and we want to wish her a very happy birthday. I understand she is at the casino tonight. And I do believe our guest has arrived, and I'm going to bring him on right now. Gotta wait for this to reset. Okay. It's coming up here. Well, no. MK, are you there, sir?
I am here.
Hello, MK. Our guest has arrived, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. MK Davis, who I consider one of the main authorities on the Patterson-Gimlin movie. And how are you tonight, MK?
Well, I'm not as good as I could be. I'm coming back from a football game. My team lost.
Yeah, that's That can be a downer.
Well, yeah, of course it is. It's just one of those, you know, even though a lot of people think I work on the film all the time, you know, I've got a whole another life that I lead, you know, football games and all kinds
right.
of other things. So, you know, it's a wonderful journey, you know, the last 10 years working on the film. And, you know, I did, you know, I felt like that. It was what I thought it was going to be, you know, something that was worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, MK, now you have a new DVD out that you've collaborated with John Johnson. It's called Spotlight on the Patterson-Gimlin Film, The M.K. Davis Theory, and it's out now. As a matter of fact, I watched it for the second time today, and very interesting stuff in it. Maybe you can give our audience some overview of exactly what is contained within that particular documentary.
Well, it's basically my take on the last 10 years and a possible theory about the Patterson film, what's on the Patterson film. excuse me, the nature of it and possible origins, you know. So it's something that's uniquely mine, you know. It's a theory that I have that I've come up with. Like I said, theories are not written in stone. They evolve over a period of time, and they continue to evolve as you add more facts. You know, the Patterson film, when I started this thing, was probably, I had a lot of holes and gaps. You know, it was only a little less than a minute of film, and it was shaky, blurry, you know, hard to follow. Intriguing, but hard to follow. So, now after 10 years, it's less so. It's still got its problems, but much less so than it did. A little easier to see, a little easier to follow, and by virtue of that, you know, when you get more information in, then you can fill some of those voids, and you can connect some dots and possibly come up with something that fits what you see on the film.
Yep. Very cool. I understand that there is a segment or a sequence that was actually left off of the original cut of the documentary, and there's a video link if you folks want to go to it. It's at https://southeastsasquatchassociation.blogspot.com/2007/links-4/links-4-tomorrows-sasquatch.html. And there's a video link there. If you would take a look at that, it apparently shows, well, MK, maybe you could explain to the audience, and we'll give them a little time to get to it. Maybe you could explain to the audience what that video link shows.
Well, basically, it wasn't really left off the DVD as much as it was like this has been a work in progress, like all works in progress, you never know when you're going to come, you know, face to face with some facts, new facts out of the film, and this happened to come after the DVD was initially finished, so it wasn't included, John is going to go back and retroactively include it because it's important. It's very important, late-breaking clip from the film that deals with more with the hair. By using the special filtering techniques, you know, you can concentrate on first one thing about the film and another thing about the film. I reconstructed this film five different times in the light of five different filters. And each one of those constructions has a different aspect of the film dominating. In other words, in the raw footage, you probably got 70% hair and about 30% skin, or maybe 25% skin and then other stuff. Okay, well, if you filter it and you enhance it properly, you can actually reverse that. You can end up with about 70% skin detail and about 30% hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I reconstructed the entire film that way. So I've got a complete run of the film with a 70% skin detail. That's where you see all this marvelous muscle movement, back movement, and the skin moving. The very natural things that you see every day, you know, when you're in life, the things that you recognize.
Yeah.
When you see nice muscle movement like that, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see, you know, that it's not something that's stiff or that's
right,
a covering of any kind.
Now, you were among the first, and perhaps the first, to note that Patty actually had very thin hair on her.
Well, it's just, over a period of time, you know, you're working with the film, and you're trying to get the best images you can. And over the period of 10 years that I worked on it, you know, as you begin to get images that are closer and closer to the master of them, or the one that was in Patterson's camera originally, the images get better and better. You realize that if you began to have some diversion or between the skin and the hair, if you have this hair and you have skin, and they're almost the same color, and then you film it with the same equipment Patterson had, it's difficult to tell where one ends and one begins. But when you have a different color skin than you do hair, and it provides some diversion of tone between the two, that's when you have something that you can really work with then as an enhancement feature. Because you can actually split the two. You can actually subtract one from the other or cause one to dominate over the other.
Mm-hmm.
When I reconstructed the film frame by frame with the skin dominating in the photograph, what came out of there was just absolutely marvelous stuff. The natural motions of the muscles, the shoulder blades, the calves, all the backs of the arms, everything that you see when you go out in life and you see people at the beach, you know, you see here. You see natural movement. You don't have to be a specialist in anatomy to tell what you're looking at here. You know, it's definitely the real deal.
Yeah. That's not consistent with a guy, you know, being in a costume or being in a suit, you know, as this Bob Hieronymus guy claims.
Oh, no, not at all. His story doesn't fit anything that's on that film, actually. If he knew, you know, what I have on this film, he'd probably be a lot less inclined to want to tango with it, you know. I really don't think that he knows, so he thinks it's a safe bet. So he thinks it's a murky, grainy film that nobody can tell anything about, and therefore he's safe from making any claim that he wants, but not so, not at all.
Yeah. Do you think that the reason that many people, especially so-called journalists, thought, oh, that film is grainy, you know, is because perhaps they were looking at the third-generation copies which Mrs. Patterson had given to different documentary companies and things like that?
Yeah, pretty much so. That's it. That's about the whole story of it. So as you get back closer to the master, this film clears up a lot. It's a marvelous film, actually. Considering the conditions it was taken under, it's really good. It's got enough data recorded on that film that you can still be pulling really, really useful information of it off of it years later after you started you know, working on it. It's about, and I've told people this, and it's about like it would be if I filmed myself and then tried to prove I was real using the film.
Mm-hmm.
You find just about that much information on it.
Yep. Now, you made a very rather controversial announcement late last year, which caused a bit of consternation in the Bigfoot community, that you had found that the creature in the film was actually human. You and I have talked, and I know you've told me it was a human of sorts. You know, maybe you could explain more further to the audience exactly what you mean by it being human.
Well, a non-simian is what I mean by being human. It's not an ape. It doesn't fit anything about an ape. At first glance, you might think so, but because of the conditions that the film was taken under and what all some of the poor copies of the film. But I'll be honest with you, Henry, I mean, you could take a film of yourself under similar conditions and you wouldn't be able to tell what you were either. You know, if you copied it over and over to three or four generations down. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the murky, unclear type of film that people think that it is. When you get back near to the better copies of it, and then you repair those and fix them and make them clear, well, then you can see what it is. It's definitely not simian, and I stand by that 100%. Now, when I say human, I mean that it doesn't mean that it's any less fantastic. It's certainly something very unusual. Size alone dictates that. Very large, very heavy, unusual hairiness. but not beyond the size that a human can get, and also not beyond the hairiness that a human can get. There are examples of both. So, you know, it's not beyond human to be that hairy or that large.
Yeah. There was a striking example of that in the documentary in which a fellow, I think from Russia, very hairy person, I mean, just almost like a werewolf, and his lips. And I noticed the comparison between the lips on this gentleman and the lips on the creature, very, very similar. There's a lot of similarities between the creature and this hairy fellow. I just found that to be very striking.
Well, yeah, and if you were to take him and put him out in Bluff Creek and found him with 67 technology, you know, and the wind-up camera and the same conditions, you might think the same thing about him. And then you copy his film over 2 or 3 times. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very easy to misidentify. I say if you combine the poor quality of those copies of the generations of the film and combine that with a very, very, very strong power of suggestion, well, then you come up with something like that. Now, what I mean by power of suggestion, I mean that if somebody keeps on ringing the bell, the 8 bell, loud and clear and strong long enough, then people will believe it, especially
yeah.
if that person has credentials. But nevertheless, credentials or no credentials, ringing a bell or no ringing a bell, if it's on the film, it's on it. If it's not, it's not. And it's irregardless of who says what about it. It's like a man, and I'll give you an example. There was a man, a teacher, who was who came into his class one day and told his class, he says, look, I'm doing an experiment on how fast odors will cross the room. And I've got this bottle of scent here, and I'm going to open it up, and I want you to raise your hand as soon as you smell it. And he said, with less than a minute, the first 3 rows raised their hand. And he said, within 4 minutes, almost the entire class was raising their hand. And all he had was a bottle of distilled water. With no
power
at all. But the power of suggestion
right.
suggested to them that there was going to be an odor and that they needed to raise their hand as quick as they smelled it. And because of that power of suggestion, they did raise their hand and they vouched for that odor.
Right.
And that's what I'm talking about. You know, it's very hard to divorce yourself from a very strong power of persuasion or power of suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in time, you know, when you're examining this film and you're seeing the things that I've seen on, you know, if you're honest with yourself, you have to go with what's on the film, the preponderance of the evidence and not the power of suggestion.
Yeah,
and you may not be the most popular fellow on the block, but by and large, the facts, the weight of the facts, will win out over the power of suggestion. Always has done that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Folks, if you have any questions for M.K. Davis, our guest tonight, the number is 347-996-5814. We also have our Yahoo Messenger open. Just PM your questions to Giant Ape, APE, 2004-2000. We also have our chat room open at our website. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Sasquatch Experience. We do have a question, MK, from Bill Green.
Okay.
Hey, MK, do you keep updated on any possible Sasquatch activity that might be reported to you by people at Bluff Creek Forest area or Willow Creek?
Do I keep up with it? Is that what he asked?
Yes, I think that's what he's asking.
No, I've been to the Bluff Creek area myself numerous times. I was there this year, twice actually. As far as I'm concerned, you know, that's ground zero, and that's because I worked on that film so long. That may not necessarily be ground zero for someone else. As I bring out in the documentary, that film, as good as it is not the best evidence. The best evidence is a personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And a personal experience is always going to trump any kind of media. And the only difference is that you can't share your personal experience with other people. They can't share it with you.
Right.
So the film, you know, it sort of bridges that gap. But because of the film, that area is of special interest to me. But if you've had, any one of your listeners have had a personal experience, I'm sure that you have your own ground zero. And that would be a very important place for you to, you know, concentrate efforts or whatever.
Exactly.
That's very, very rugged wilderness. It's changed very little from the days that Patterson was in there. There's a few more roads going in there now, but the Forest Service has decommissioned those roads. They're not going to repair them. They're going to go down, and it's going to return back to almost inaccessible areas again.
Mm-hmm. So MK, we got...
It's wild.
Yeah. We got a call from the 813 area code. 813, you are on the air with the Sasquatch Experience, Henry May and MK Davis.
Hello, Henry and MK. This is John Johnson.
Hello, John.
Hey, John.
How you guys doing?
Oh, just fine.
MK, I'm sorry to hear your team lost tonight.
Well, but that happens. That's just life, you know. That's always tomorrow.
Well, you know, if you'd had Chuck on the team, maybe we'd have put one over the fence for you.
Well, John, I watched the documentary again today, and it gets better every time I watch it. It's just tremendous.
Thank you, Henry. MK and I, well, I decided to post that little bit on my FTP site so that people could see the braid. Actually, I don't think that MK had realized that the braid was attached to a longer piece of hair. But
I didn't, because I picked it up on the cheek at first, and that was the very tip of it, and it was laying across the cheek. And it did seem like an odd place for something like that to be, but nevertheless, that's where it was. But I got an explanation for it later.
And the fact that this thing is waving back and forth as Patty's walking, and some other characteristics, I don't know. Putting this thing up on my website, I had mixed feelings about it, because when MK got in so much trouble over on some of the other blogs with his release, part of the problem is what people are viewing it on, and people don't know that the old CRT monitors, cathode ray tube, is a much better place to watch this stuff. The little flat panels, unless you've got a very good one with a high contrast ratio over 1,000 and other characteristics, you're not going to see them very well. My own laptop, which, you know, is a compact, it's a very good one. It's up to date. It's only got a 150-to-1 contrast ratio. So I don't rely on that thing to do anything as far as discerning what an image looks like. I'll take it back and I'll put it up here in my edit suite, where I've got three very high-resolution 19-inch video monitors. But I had mixed feelings about it, because you're going to get some people whose machines aren't in top shape or don't have the advantage of having a good high-resolution monitor in good shape, and so they're going to be left cold. But I did it, and I loaded it up there at a broadband speed, so I'm sorry if anybody out there is having trouble downloading or opening this thing. It'll take you some time and dial up, but it's worth the wait, I assure you.
Yeah, now, I did see that. You know, MK sent me the link to that. It's very intriguing, I have to say. It's an intriguing piece of footage. Now, of course, some would interpret it as, film noise or film grain or something like that, you know.
Well, you know, see, and those who haven't seen the rest of the DVD and haven't seen my little treatments on film noise and grain and on computer enhancement, you've got to know that, from my engineering days in college, you've got to know that when you gain something, you give something up. There's no free lunch. So if you're going to go in like I did, like what I showed on the DVD with regards to looking for things on film, on that film, and you go in on that frame where it's originally a color frame, and it's a very dark background in the woods, and you don't see that tree standing there. And on the next frame that was has been enhanced, the tree stands out with bark detail. But the problem with that is that once you do that, you lose detail in the rest of the image. But that's of no consequence because you're looking for the bark on the tree. And so what MK has done and what the viewers have got to understand is that when you enhance a portion of any type of film digitally or manually, I spent a good solid 20 years in the darkroom doing all of my own pictures. I processed all of my own slide film, color film, black and white films. I used the Cibachrome process. I used the C-print process, the E-print process. And I was very familiar with how to work on photographs. And there were tools such as variable contrast filters, high contrast papers, special developers, and then dodging and burning techniques under the enlarger that you could produce just about anything that you see digital, could be done manually. The only thing that has changed has been the method. So that you've got to understand that when you look at a certain portion, if you say, well, I want to see the detail in this area, you work on that area. You cannot expect the rest of that film, the rest of the frame, be it film, a photograph, or any type of media, you cannot expect the rest of that area to look like the area that you're enhancing. You go for it selectively. So it's going to look like, to a lot of people, it's going to look like a bunch of nothing because they're expecting all of the rest of that frame to be enhanced and clear. Well, it's just not going to happen. You could do it by selectively doing all of the areas in layers and then putting it together. But come on, man, there's 900 some odd frames in that thing, and you know that takes real time. So when you look at what the hair detail, you have to throw out the other details in the frame.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's one of the things that as a matter of fact, if you concerning that particular file that's at that web that link, that's what the detail that contains that particular feature is well beyond the, you know, well above the threshold of resolution. In other words, it's a very large feature on it. We're talking about hair that's probably shoulder length. You know, so that's, what, probably 10 inches, 11 inches, something like that. What'd you say, John?
Yeah, and I got to say, too, about the film resolution, in the DVD, if you have the DVD, there is a cycling animation that shows a speck of dust or possibly a droplet of some sort of moisture that was transferred to the film as that copy was made. And when you look at that thing coming and going in that cycling animation, it's huge. It looks like a basketball in there compared to the rest of the detail. Even at the magnification that MK is using, he's only just beginning to show granularity in that film. Kodachrome 25 was amazing stuff, and the Kodachrome films remain that way. They are extremely fine-grained process, and it couldn't have happened better. Circumstances for further analysis down the road in computers than the combination that Patterson used. If he'd used a high-speed ektachrome, say a 400 film, by the time you'd gotten to a third of the size of what MK needed to do his work, it would have washed out and looked like pebbles on concrete.
Mm-hmm. John, we have a comment and also a question from Bill Green for you.
Okay.
He says, hey, John, how is Hunt the Dogman coming along? Your Patterson Gimlin DVD is wonderful.
Thank you, Bill, and Hunt the Dogman's coming along, and it'll be out by, it should be out by Halloween if MK doesn't throw any more curveballs at me. That was a joke, MK, and working on it, and I worked on it some today. I had an opportunity to do so, and The thing is, though, this one's going to be long. My partner, Barton Nunley, on this has expressed the desire to keep as much of the interviews in. And I would like to see them limited somewhat, but I'm going to do my best to do it. So this is going to be a long one. So when you get that one, you need to sit down with a bag of popcorn.
Wow. Sounds great. Now, MK, since last time we talked on the air here, you have actually transferred the rights to your enhancements over to Mrs. Patterson.
Oh, yes, I sure did. I got a little concerned about the possibility that there might be some challenge to the film for the rights at some point in the future. I did not want to see that happen. Just to cover all possibilities, I made sure if that were to happen, if the film were successfully challenged by somebody and the rights were said to be, it was in the public domain, that would make all my renderings become my own property according to the new copyright laws.
Mm-hmm.
So after finding that out, I realized that if that were to happen, then it could leave Patricia, you know, without anything. And I just was not going to have that. So what I did was to sort of preempt anything that would happen like that by immediately transferring everything that I've rendered off that film over to her. That way, even if it did were to happen in the future, that everything that I've done, all of the 10 years of my work would go immediately to her. It already has. It's hers. So she doesn't lose. You know, that's one thing. I believe in right and wrong, and this woman's husband took this film, and I would do just about anything I could in my power to see to it that she benefits from it.
Well, mm-hmm. and Henry, let me make a point of this too. Is there? I've been on occasion accused of trying to take advantage of Mrs. Patterson. What I did is I helped her and MK broker this deal, and it came after I did an extensive copyright search on the film. And it's sad, but I think that Mrs. Patterson would have some trouble surviving a legal challenge to it. And we have, after all of this is said and done, she has been paid very well for the use of all of MK's stuff in the DVD. So there's been no free ride for anybody. And as MK had emphasized to me also, is that presently or in the past, the raw film footage has been used and blown up somewhat. But more and more you are seeing MK's animations on Discovery Channel and the History Channel and whatnot, and it's going to be that way. It's going to be the use of these animations that's going to be going to go on with the broadcasting media, and not the original film. So eventually, that is going to just kind of fade away. This will ensure her and her heirs some sort of income from this film for as long as they see fit.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick commercial break real quick. John, can you hang around?
Sure, I can hang on.
Okay, we'll be right back after these messages from Beyond the Edge Radio.
Death has come to your little town, Sheriff. You can either ignore it, or you can help me to stop it.
This Halloween, there's nowhere to run. Nowhere to hide. No one is safe. They are coming.
They're here.
Coming to take you on one of the scariest journeys you've ever been on. Squatch Media Productions, in association with Blog Talk Radio, presents Beyond the Edge Radio. Join your host, John Forker, and Eric Altman starting October 26th at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. every Friday night at 9, Sean and Eric prepare to bring you thrills and chills with spine-tingling topics such as hauntings, ghosts, Bigfoot, Mothman, Men in Black, UFOs, extraterrestrials, and topics to make your hair stand on end. So turn on all your lights, lock your doors, and check under your bed.
Are you alone in the house?
Sean and Eric are coming to Blog Talk Radio with Beyond the Edge Radio. Friday nights will never be the same.
And we are back, and that is the promo for our upcoming newest acquisition for Squatch Media Productions that premieres this Friday night. I believe it'll be 8:30 Eastern, folks, so if you want to tune in, that way it's going to be a great show. So we are back with our guest MK Davis, and also John Johnson is with us. I wanted to ask John. I wanted to kind of ask both of you, and you can answer this one at a time. How much trouble did you encounter in producing this documentary, as far as legal trouble or anything like that, or if you encountered any?
Well, as the primary production producer, I wanted to set out. As a matter of fact, I set out on my copyright search even prior to making Keeping the Watch. I had learned enough about it on my own to have doubts about its status, the Patterson status. I also knew that in 1978, I was just beginning in the photography business, and I was having problems with a paper no longer operating here called the Tampa Times here in Tampa, who was publishing some of my photos as I would, chase fire trucks and that sort of thing. But they were copywriting them. They were issuing the copyright notice as to the Tampa Times, and it was really, really annoying me. It was getting no bylines. So when this happened in 1978, the ruling changed drastically and for the better, and I can remember cheering when I heard it. But after that happened, the Tampa Times never bought any more freelance photos. They went to their staff photographers. And that was that as soon as the shutter falls or the ink dries on the paper or the paint dries on the palette or whatever type of intellectual property you have, as soon as it's created, it is yours. It's yours forever under the copyright rules of 1978. The problem with the Patterson film is that it was not grandfathered in. Nothing was grandfathered in from the older rule, which goes back to the early 1900s, which stated you have got to have copyright symbol and information shown at every venue, public venue, or you lose the right to the public domain. And I think there may have been, without trying to set the woods on fire here, a better than fair chance that happened. And that's why, MK and I talked about it. MK had pretty much wanted Patricia to own all of her stuff, so we... he went ahead and did that. Now, there were other legal issues, though, that bothered me. And in 30 years of practicing as a freelance photographer and later in my practice as a videographer as well, I only had reason to hire an attorney one time, and that was it involved copyright litigation, where I had a client who suddenly, after beating me up on the price, on a shoot, I'm driving down the road in her area, and I notice my work is up on a billboard advertising her business. I said, well, that's interesting. I said, because that wasn't in the contract. So after calling her, and she assured me we'd get together and blah, blah, blah. Well, I saw it. Her advertising campaign expanded. So after trying to reason with the woman, I ended up obtaining an attorney, and we ended up with a settlement from her. And we what she had done is taken the prints, my original prints, to a photo lab who copied them and then produced the billboards for her. In the end, that photo lab went out of business, most likely due to mostly our litigation. And it set a precedent in the area at the time. Most of my peers would say, you know, that was nonsense. But the point is that my commercial sales on the billboard would have yielded me, a substantial amount of money from her. Yet she chose to just copy my work and use it at her own discretion, and the photo lab knew that it was wrong. But in 30 years, I had that one instance. Yet in the last year and a half, or essentially since MK's announcement to the world, I've had on at least three occasions to send legal documents to people telling them if they didn't reduce the libel and slander on the blogs, they would be sued. And it's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate, and there are people that, there's somebody who just seems not to get it, and I'm not going to mention any names, but it's very unfortunate, and I find it to be a sad testament to people in general, and certainly to serious research in this realm. I'm a totally accidental participant in all of this, and I chose to hang on when I. After doing MK's interview for Keeping the Watch, what he had was so intriguing that it kept me in there on another project until he made that release, and then I thought, well, this is going to have to go out on DVD or in some sort of media that will equal the playing field for everybody, because most of the time televisions have got the same resolution, and you're going to need to see this in the same resolution rather than have that variable factor of computers. But to answer your question, no real legal issues, but I've covered the bases, and I've proceeded with caution, and I make sure that anybody who has rights or given the benefit of the doubt that has the rights has been paid for the usage.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I have to say that, never mind, I just got a message about something. Anyway.
Henry is stuck in the door, okay.
You will see in the chat room, John.
Well, I just happened to page down, and I can see the chat room going on as we speak. But, MK, you haven't experienced anything as far as legal issues, have you? I mean, not that I'm aware of.
No, I haven't. No, not at all. What I've tried to do in the last 10 years was to do some real good with the film and to benefit the owners and the copyright holders and to benefit the world as a whole and as far as the importance of what's on it. It's beyond me why anyone would not want this film classified. And yet there are people who do not want it to be clarified. They'd rather see it in the river. Life of me, I can't figure that out. You get a that's this good that will survive enhancement really well, and that will tell you what's on it. You don't have to use your imagination on most of this or be a rocket scientist. And to have someone not want this done, I can't figure it out. Why would anyone not want this film clarified?
Yeah, I agree with you. Some of the old guard, especially some of the Pacific Northwest people, they think, oh, well, MK's seeing things that aren't there and all that stuff. You've heard the complaints, MK, and I'm sure you've heard them too, John.
Yeah, we've both, MK and I, have not only heard them, we've experienced them, and I can tell you that you can, as MK has told me, and I'll say it here, you cannot simply wish something into existence. You cannot wish that this thing is anything but what it is. And one of the latest comments I saw on this is, you know, you don't want to overanalyze something. It is what it is. Well, yes, it is what it is, and it can be analyzed. It can be analyzed successfully the way that MK Davis is doing it. There are people who are just enough about computers to get themselves into trouble. And for those people, you need to leave the heavy-duty stuff with those who understand it. It's, you know, just like I wouldn't go running out trying to solve a major crime spree. I mean, there are people much smarter in that area than I am. I'd probably go out there and cause a major crime spree trying to solve one. And it's the same thing with the computer enhancement. MK has got so much experience in doing this. And I'll tell you, I've watched him work. And this is exacting work. And once you understand that you have an image, you can dig into that image if you have the right tools. And he's got the right tools. And I'll tell you, I'm very well versed in the use of Photoshop and in the use of Adobe Premiere for movies. And I cannot, if I take the still image and try to do what he's doing, I can do the CMYK splits and the removals and all of the other stuff, and I'll look at that thing, and then he'll send me his version, and I just got to shake my head. So I just leave it alone. He's much better at it, and he's using a much less expensive program than Photoshop, and he's doing it, I really don't understand, but I can tell you that he's working right now, I hope he's working right now on a little bit of footage that I sent him the last couple of days on this alleged Gable film that's been bouncing around the web, and I'm sure you've seen that, Henry, about the Dog Man of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was declared by its owner as a hoax based on what they were looking at on, you know, and I'll tell you right now that MK and I disagree with him, and we have Bart Nunley and I have had Mr. Steve Cook has signed us over the rights to use that to do with it as we wish in this production. And if he's listening, Steve, we do appreciate that, and you know you're not going to be smeared. We just disagree with your decision on the film, and I'll tell you that what just the stuff that MK has enhanced through the DVD quality MPEG-2 that I sent him via email will make your blood run cold. This is not, it's not a dog, it's not an ape, it's not a baboon, but it is also, we believe, not a hoax. And it's something that when he gets the file, well, he got the files today, I think, in the mail, and when he gets through with these things, it's going to be in the Dog Man, and hopefully we're going to bring some another whole problem to light after that.
Mm-hmm. We have a question for MK from the chat room from John Cartwright. He says, "Is MK going to enhance the New Mexico film?"
Uh oh, you there, MK?
Have we lost MK? Oh, we have, unfortunately. Sorry, folks, live radio, sometimes cell phones cut out. It's just me and John Johnson right now.
MK, I know you're listening, buddy. Call back in. I'll relinquish as soon as I hear you.
As
I know, he hasn't mentioned anything about that to me. Is that the one where this thing is allegedly in a camper?
Well, apparently it's some kind of
or something, or
there's only a still of that has been released so far. It's some far away figure, which you really can't tell what it is one way or the other. The actual video itself has not been released. Actually, MK is back. All right, I'm going to bring him back on. MK?
Yeah.
Okay. We had a question.
I mean, before we go any further, I may drop again. I'm in a little dead area right here, but if I do, I'll call right back.
Okay. We had a question for you from John Cartwright. If you were going to enhance the New Mexico film or do any work on it.
I'm not really sure what film that is. Maybe you can inform me of it. I don't know.
Well, I was telling John that it has not been released yet. A couple of fellows from Tennessee were driving through New Mexico, and they had their video cameras sticking out the their windows, and they were filming, and one of them caught a figure off far away in the desert, and they have not released it yet. They want to get a copyright on it before they release it. You know, sometimes that has thrown up some red flags with some Bigfooters, but anyway.
Well, if they're listening, your copyright is yours as soon as you squeeze that shutter. But
right.
I don't, and that's something I've tried to explain to people who have gone on, despite my advice, to spend money with a lawyer. And even in my searches, if you go to the copyright office, I have found more people who don't own anything with their names registered because they've sold everything, and the records aren't updated. And the clerk of the copyright office simply told me that this is not a good place to look for copyrights. I said, well, that's marvelous. You know, we have this whole office, and she says, you can't take it as the gospel. She says, you've gotta have to do the homework. But, MK, I don't know. The only thing that I knew about that footage was that there was a still released of something coming out of a camper on that one. Do you remember that?
Something coming
out of the camper.
No, I don't remember anything about it. I really don't. There's a lot of films out there, and they're all, I take each film or each clip that somebody sends me, I take it on its own merits. I try not to be judgmental. Because, you know, I try to let the film do the talk. Excuse me, let the film do the talking. If there's something on it that will indicate to me that it's a hoax, you know, I'll say that. If it looks like the entire film is there's nothing on it that will tell me it's a hoax, well, I'll say that too. That doesn't mean it's not a hoax. That means that there's nothing on it that indicates that it's a hoax. And so, that's all I can do. I technically, and of course, I'm just a human like everybody else is, and some things look rather cheesy. But I'm not gonna condemn anybody's film unless something on them to tell me to do that. That's true to what the film is actually saying. So if I had an opportunity to look at New Mexico footage, that's the way I would approach it. I would say, frame by frame, let me look at it. I know some things about them that may tell me if this thing is possibly, you know, contrived. If it doesn't tell me that, then technically
MK, just as a point, we're about to lose you again, so if you can step out of the outhouse, maybe, or or I tell you, give the phone to Chuck. He can fix it. I can tell you from working with MK, and I've heard people get in my face that he has an agenda. The guy's got no agenda. And that's one reason I chose to continue working with him, because I didn't want to have to spin something, and there's something I won't do is spin. I'll present the interviews, I'll present everything on the film and let the, because, you know, people who buy the stuff or see the stuff, you guys are plenty smart to make a decision on your own. I've had the opportunity to talk personally to some of the skeptics that you see on, who've been hired by National Geographic, especially from the Skeptical Inquirer. Joe Nickel, I've spoken to him, and it's just they come across like people who really, you know, if they were to look in the mirror, they would not believe what they were seeing. So, you know, I to work with MK, the guy's got no agenda. He's not out there promoting himself. He could have made a substantial amount of money from this stuff, but he's concerned about Patricia and her family in the oncoming years. And so a guy like that is, you know, is good to be associated with. It's guilt by association, or I don't know what else can you call it. It's just you're going to be judged by the company you keep, and I'm not going to get involved with somebody who's out there just to make a buck.
Yeah, well, and I know MK. I mean, you know, I've known him for over 2 years, and I've never known him to have an agenda on anything. I've never known him to, to want to promote himself or anything like that. He lets others do it for him, and then that's an admirable trait, I think. And MK is back, by the way. Are you out of the outhouse yet, MK?
Yeah, I'm at a little old town called Midway, and that's it got its name because it is middle of the way from anywhere else. hopefully, I can keep the signal long enough to get past Midway.
You mean that's a lonelier place than Benton?
It's lonelier, yes. As a matter of fact, if Benton is a speck, this is an atomic particle.
Between you and me, Henry, the first time I made the trip to Benton off of the interstate, and it just kept getting farther and farther and farther, and I had no cell service or anything. And, you know, my first comment to myself was, how can anybody live out here? You know? But anyway, while you were gone, I explained your agenda, which maybe you can elaborate on that, as that you don't have one.
I don't have an agenda.
Right.
Nothing except for digging for what the truth. You know, that's sort of my agenda. I don't care, you know, particularly where it goes, except that if it's any truth or any knowledge or any data that can be, you know, extrapolated from, you know, the Patterson film, that it needs to be done because this is an important film. It's very important. It's important now that I know what's on it. It's important anthropologically. It's important ethnologically. You know, words can't really express how important it is. And now that we're past what's on it, you know, maybe some of the really smart people who know a lot about this sort of thing in that field of endeavor will use the film, and we can go forward with that. That's what I hope.
We have about 3 minutes left. It's been 40 years now, gentlemen, 40 years today. Well, how do you think the state of Bigfoot research would be if the film had not been taken, or if it were conclusively proven to be a hoax? And that's just if.
I'll let you handle that one, MK.
Well, you know, that's one of those hypothetical situations, you know, where I'm so far beyond that, Henry. It's hard to look back that far. You know, it's like going from here to California. It wouldn't do me much good to stand in California and look back down the road just what I dropped in Mississippi. That's a long way back down the road. It's, you know, it's virtually an impossibility now. You know, so it's not something I even consider anymore.
Yep. I hear you.
And as far as I can consider this, Henry, Bigfoot research is that's kind of an oxymoron. I've encountered so many really good people, but I've encountered a lot of people who I just cannot figure out. And that's about all I'll say.
I understand where you're coming from. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank both of you for coming on tonight. And by the way, the DVD can be purchased at grendelfilms.org. That's grendelfilms.org. And also Hunt the Dogmen, which is coming out very soon. And that looks like another interesting and very cool project from John Johnson. So, gentlemen, I want to thank both of you for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me, Henry. Appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me stick around, Henry, and talk to you soon.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk to y'all later. And tomorrow night, if Sean and James make it back, well, I think we're going to continue this discussion about the 40th anniversary of the Patterson Gimlin movie. It'll also be kind of an open mic tomorrow night also. And then we've got Tuesday we've got a tribute to Renee DeHinden. That'll be on Tuesday night, and then next Sunday we'll have a roundtable discussion of the important historical figures in Bigfooting, such as John Green, Grover Grants, Renee DeHinden, and Peter Byrne, also Bob Titmuss, Al Hodgson, and of course Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. So until tomorrow night, and they'll be back on our regular time, 9 p.m. Eastern, y'all be good or be good at it. This has been the Sasquatch Experience. Good night, folks.
Good night.